This is an interview with Betty Roberts. This is tape 30, side 2.
At any rate, for the recall to, of course, to even have a chance, you'd have to go to the Secretary of State, ask the Secretary of State to certify the recall effort, mm-hmm. and let petitions be circulated to get the names. If the Secretary of State had allowed us to do that, or allowed anybody to do that, I certainly was not going to be the person to initiate it, but then we all agreed that Packwood would step in and say, no, you can't do this, and we'd go to court. We could, on the other hand, if the Secretary of State refused to certify it, then the group who was concerned about it could take it to court. Either way you looked at it, it was going to be a long, drawn-out court procedure, mm-hmm. on whether or not the citizens of a state can recall a congressman or a U.S. senator. And so then we began to turn to a lot of other ways to proceed. The first thing that was done was that complaints were filed with the U.S. Senate, so that a formal complaint would be in the hands of the Senate, and it would be referred to the Ethics Committee, and that's the way the Ethics Committee begins investigations. They can, the Senate Ethics Committee, which is made up of senators, three Democrats and three Republicans. So either something has to be called to their attention if they go out and investigate it on their own, or someone has to make a formal complaint, mm-hmm. to them. So there were a number of complaints sent in for the Ethics Committee to start to be notified that many people out here felt that this was serious. And in fact, a woman attorney from California, Gloria Allred, was the first one to file a complaint. She simply did it in a letter and said, you know, this is intolerable. Then there were a bunch of Oregonians who sent complaints.
Were there women's groups that did not get involved? Was NOW involved?
Oh, yeah. NOW was at that press conference, you bet. Yeah. And has been involved ever since. Uh-huh. At any rate, our options began to be reduced. You know, of what can you do? Mm-hmm. It was a great lesson for me. I found it intriguing from the standpoint of working with the laws and what can you do, and the political part of it. You know, what should we do, mm-hmm. from a political partisan standpoint? And then we decided that it would take a long time for the Ethics Committee to do its investigation, and therefore we would simply ask the Senate not to seat Packwood. And to not seat it, because this came out after the election. So the Secretary of State had certified the election, and as far as they were all concerned back there, it was perfectly legal. But if we tried to block the seating, then they would at least have to sit up and take notice, mm-hmm. of this, that there were a lot of upset people out in Oregon. So a number of these petitions not to seat Packwood were filed. They were sent to the Rules Committee, which determines first this qualification for members. And I was there on opening day because I had gone to see all of the women senators who had been, Democratic women senators who had been elected, and for the first time had more than we've ever had in the U.S. Senate. I think five newly elected women in the U.S. Senate. There had only been two. They're Nancy Kassenbaum and Barbara Mikulski from Maryland. And so added to this were another group of women, Patty Murray from Washington, Dianne Feinstein, Barbara Boxer, Carol Moseley Braun. Seems like there's one more. At any rate, this was a historical thing, yeah. and I had an opportunity to go, so I wanted to go. But we'd also filed these objections to him being seated, and I wanted to see what was going to happen on opening day, because they have to go up and be sworn in. When it's Bob Packwood's turn to be sworn in, what's going to happen? And what happened was, that before they started swearing in was that George Mitchell, the majority leader, took the floor and said that he wanted to recognize that there had been these petitions not to seat the senator from Oregon, that it had been the caucus decision that he would be seated, but he would be seated conditionally.
Mm-hmm.
And conditionally upon what the Rules Committee decided when it would ultimately hear the argument on why he should not be seated, or ultimately on the outcome of the Ethics Committee. You know, and then of course Bob Dole got up, the minority leader, Republican leader, and said, well, that's just so much terminology and language. As far as we're concerned, Bob Pack was being seated today. You know, you can say conditionally if you want to, but really he's being seated. Well, you know, that was the other partisan side of it. But at least here was the opening day of the United States Senate, and these people from Oregon had been able, just by the sheer outcry, and the communication back there, immediate communication, and the volumes of paper that went back, and from other states, you know, because then we were beginning to talk with particularly women in other states, to put some pressure on. At least they recognized it, you know, mm-hmm. This is a problem. It went to the Rules Committee, and the Rules Committee did not have, they allowed petitions to, or briefs to be filed. And so we had about five lawyers working on that brief on why Bob Packwood should not be seated. And there was, believe it or not, a lot of history of senators not having been seated.
Hmm.
Or after the fact, being expelled.
Mm-hmm.
But we were concentrating on the not seated. So those cases were discussed and argued, and the fraud on the voters was discussed in the briefs, and then Packwood's lawyers filed some briefs, and then we filed some more briefs, and they finally set argument for early May, as I recall. I mean, it took that long for all of this stuff to get back and forth. And the Rules Committee did hear. We hired a Washington lawyer to argue, and they did, and it was on C-SPAN. The whole hearing, and then voted unanimously that to deny our petitions, and so that left Packwood seated as a U.S. senator. But part of that was that, and some of the senators said this, that this is more appropriately in the Ethics Committee, and so the Ethics Committee is carrying on its investigation. But given the facts of what we have here, we're not going to get into that issue of his conduct. Then we're denying the request that he not be seated. So what had happened in the meantime was that the Ethics Committee had begun, these complaints had gotten there, and they had begun to their investigation. And in fact, the chair and vice chair. Chair is
of the Ethics Committee?
Chair of the Ethics mm-hmm. Committee from Nevada, Senator Bryan. And the vice chair is Senator McConnell from, I believe, Kentucky. They issued jointly a statement that they were going to investigate, and they would start taking depositions of first the women, probably, mm-hmm. and then all others that they would name, and ultimately Packwood and staff there, and that they were going to be investigating the allegations of sexual harassment, and that they would, as well, and the attempts on the part of the senator to discredit them.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were going to go after both of those. And they did a third thing. They adopted what's called the rape shield rule. It's in the federal rules of evidence, and it's also now, by reason of some legislation that we passed in the 70s, in our state rule of evidence, and that is the rape shield rule that says when a woman makes an accusation of some sexual behavior on the part of the defendant, any evidence of the woman's prior or subsequent sexual behavior is not admissible unless it is relevant, has to be mm-hmm. relevant to mm-hmm. that issue. So that was, you know, all of that was just really good news to us. We said, you know, they've really gotten the message and they know what this is all about. Of course, Clark, while all this was going on, you know, every day we picked up the Oregonian, there was something else there. Not necessarily another woman, although some more did come forward that the Oregonian reported, and one did come forward down in Dallas, Texas. And so, you know, the numbers of women kept growing. But also, the Oregonian became very irate because they had endorsed Paquin. And it was a very close vote on the editorial board, I'm told, and that it was, mm-hmm. you know, some it was a one that had to bring in the Fred Stickle, as I am told, to break the tie vote, mm-hmm. whether to endorse Packwood or endorse Arcoin or not endorse at all. And so the Washington Post beat the Oregonian to the story. So yeah. The Oregonian had egg all over its face for both reasons. That here was their senator who, and then stories started coming out almost immediately that the Oregonian knew about this and had killed it. That they mm-hmm. that they mm-hmm. had for a long time been told these stories and they had not put a reporter on it and hadn't done their work. Well, so the Oregonian was looking pretty bad. And in fact, I made a reference to that in the in that very first press conference, mm-hmm. because by that time there had been a lot of people say, hey, a lot of people in Oregon know this. The Oregonian even had a reporter on it once.
Well, then all those bumper stickers came out about you know, the slogan of the Oregonian, if it matters to Oregonians, it's in the Oregonian.
Read it in the Washington Post.
Yeah, but if it matters to Oregonians, it's in the Washington Post, right?
Yeah, right, yeah, yeah. So the Oregonian then came out editorializing that that Packwood should resign. Uh-huh. And so, you know, then we, you know, sometimes I was involved, sometimes I wasn't. But people who uh-huh. were saying this, yes, he should resign, this kept, you know, resign. And then when he didn't have an explanation coming out of the substance abuse clinic, you know, comedians got a hold of it, Jay Leno and, you know, you name it. And then all the press wanted some of the women on. Larry King wanted some of the women on. You know, McNeil Lear wanted some of the women on, or somebody else. I was on McNeil Lear. I was on Good Morning America. I was on Larry King. You know, all of this. You know, 15 minutes of fame that everybody has. That was my 15 minutes during that period of time. And you know, and what's so wrong with this? Wasn't all men doing this kind of thing? And Packwood says this isn't sexual harassment because many of the women didn't work for him, so it doesn't come under the definition. I mean, you know, it got to be pretty complex. But when my role considerably speeded up, when the ethics committee said we're going to start investigating and we're going to take depositions, bingo. Anybody who gets a deposition taken needs a lawyer. Doesn't matter whether that deposition is going to be used in a court of law, or if it's in preparation for something that's in a court of law, or whether it's an investigative committee in the U.S. Senate, where they have a great deal of power, you know, and the women themselves needed some support and some explanations about what this procedure is all about. One of the women who's been really one of the best spokespersons is Julie Williamson. And Julie mm-hmm. had told me that she had already retained Art Johnson down in Eugene, but that it was her feeling that all of the women ought to have representation, legal representation. And then we began to organize a little bit about who these women were. And Julie primarily was in contact with almost all of them for a long period of time. And I took responsibility for recruiting some lawyers to just simply say, will you represent this woman and it was never turned down. As it has now filtered out and as it did then, in a relatively short period of time, we have about 15 lawyers involved in representing women. Art Johnson's firm in Eugene has four, you know, and we say still has because this has not been resolved. And there's a DC, we have one woman in DC who's being represented by a man who was on the staff of the Senate Ethics Committee and has worked before the Ethics Committee as a lawyer, and a woman professor at Southern Methodist University in the law school there is representing the woman in Dallas, and then we've got a lot right here in Portland, in Portland, Oregon, who are representing people here. There's a woman in Pennsylvania, but she's being represented by an attorney in Oregon. So then, once we had, you know, a bunch of attorneys involved, then it was a question of coordinating this and trying to develop some communication between the attorneys. For example, when after the first woman's deposition was taken, everybody else wanted to know, what do they ask? You know, who's doing it? What do they ask? How do I advise my client? The Ethics Committee immediately put on, well, it took them a few months, I guess, to find this woman, a woman by the name of Linda Chapman. I've not met Linda, but she's a very outstanding lawyer, for this to be her sole responsibility. The Chief of Staff on the Senate Ethics Committee, Victor Baird, of course, is still, you know, the supervisor of all the attorneys on the Ethics Committee, three or four, five of them. But Linda was hired just for this particular thing. And so Linda and Victor and sometimes another woman by the name of Karen Bouvard would come to Oregon from Washington, D.C. and take depositions of the women. But by the time any deposition was taken, all these women had legal representation. Mm-hmm. Since then, well, so that, you know, that all began through, that all went on through 93.
Was there any response from Georgie Packwood about her former husband's activities or how she felt about all this coming out?
Well, of course, the press immediately, they were divorced.
Yes, right.
The press immediately began to contact everybody they could who had ever had any association with Bob Packwood, and Georgie, you know, was at the top of the list.
Sure.
Early on, Georgie did not talk about it, but she has since talked about that she thought Bob Packwood lost his direction somewhere and that it was too bad because, you know, he was really an outstanding legislator here in Oregon and in the U.S. Senate. And you know, he had his own niche of issues that he was interested in. He had a very powerful position on the Finance Committee, and her general tone was, it's too bad, you know, that he has done this. But then as more as she granted more interviews, a bigger picture came through about what their relationship had been most of the time that they had been in D.C., and it was certainly not a happy marriage. It was more that he was very critical of her and often did not take her any places, and that she was never involved in the campaign, and she was very critical of Elaine Franklin, who's been his chief of staff now for a number of years, and who is his chief strategist in political campaigns too.
She must have been very distraught, discouraged by all this.
Georgie.
Oh,
I'm sure. I have not talked to Georgie personally since all of this happened. She has been some places where I have been, but I don't feel I want to approach her on it. But I'm sure it's been very hard for her and two children that they have, a son and a daughter. It's been very hard. But this is—it's gone on now through '93 with the Senate Ethics Committee investigating, with periodically another woman coming forward, and so, you know, it happens again. Or Bob Packwood comes back to Oregon and tries to pretend that nothing's happened and tries to get his speaking engagements. And early on, there were a lot of demonstrations wherever he would go. There was a rally down in Terry Schrunk Plaza, well attended, when he announced he would be in the state. And so, you know, over the period of time, and polls were taken about whether or not the voters thought that he should resign. And now we're kind of at a stalemate. Well, one thing I certainly ought to explain is that in the fall, of 94, about a year ago, when the Ethics Committee was taking Packwood's deposition. In the process, he offered his diary to the Ethics Committee to on the question of one particular woman. And he offered his diary there as evidence of what the relationship apparently was between Packwood and this woman, or something that this woman had said to him, and he had put it into his diary. And then the Ethics Committee asked for his entire diary, and he refused. There began to be speculation about job offers to Georgie at the time of their divorce, and that he was soliciting lobbyists to give her a job so he wouldn't have to pay as much alimony, and that this was a violation, if not a violation of the law, at least a violation of the rules of the Senate, but very well maybe a violation of some criminal statutes. So then when he refused to give his diaries to the Ethics Committee, the Ethics Committee went to court to, first of all, in order to go to court, they had to go to the floor of the Senate to ask the Senate to allow them to go to court to get the diaries. That was the only way that they could make him comply. And apparently, this was, in all other investigations that the Ethics Committee had done of various of its members, including the Keating Five, the five senators who were involved in some of the savings and loans failures and scandals, they had never had anyone refuse to give them documents. And in many cases, the documents were damaging to the individuals, but they always cooperated with the Ethics Committee. Here is one of their own not cooperating with them. And so in order to get that material, and by this time, apparently the staff had reason to believe and had told the Ethics Committee this, that there were other violations, that there were evidences of violations of some sort in there, and that once it's brought to their attention, no matter how it is, they have an obligation to go ahead and pursue it. And then I guess, you know, it's kind of an old story to repeat here. You know it, and I know it, and it can all be documented by that period of time from the Oregonian, if not a lot of other sources, that there was a two-day debate on the floor of the Senate. 2 days or 1 day? Forgotten when they took the vote. I guess it was 2 days, because Senator Bryan carried the argument on the first day, defending the Ethics Committee's right to have those diaries, and there were speeches. And then Senator McConnell took over after that, and he was equally as firm in, and which kind of pleasantly surprised many of us, because we had thought it might be a partisan battle in the committee, that he had no reason to withhold those diaries. He had no right to withhold those diaries from the Ethics Committee. So the Senate voted 94-6 to require Packwood to turn over the diaries, or to give to the Ethics Committee the authority to go to court and have a court compel him to turn over the diaries. So they went to court. And then Packwood, of course, being represented over this period of time by lawyer Fitzpatrick, James Fitzpatrick in Washington, D.C., who had been his lawyer through the Rules Committee and still with him. I'm not sure at what point he fired Fitzpatrick or Fitzpatrick left on his own, but he hired another lawyer. And, of course, they appealed the trial court's decision, and the Court of Appeals simply rubber-stamped the trial court's decision, saying, yes, you have to give this over to the Ethics Committee. And it went up to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court denied review, but wrote Rehnquist, again, a very conservative Republican, but and the presiding justice, Chief Justice, wrote a memo saying, in essence, what the trial court had said, mm-hmm. that there's no justification to withhold these. I can't remember. So that gets us into this year of 94, and that was finally determined in the spring. Then the ethics committee, but the diaries had to go, the court ordered that the diaries go through a third party, and happened to be Kenneth Starr, who's now on the Clinton, the President Clinton investigation. And so, anyway, he was to mask over some parts that were personal or were medical, and that would be privileged communication in a court of law, and that Kenneth Starr then would look under the tape to be sure that he had not taped something that could not be excluded, and then the diaries were to go on to the ethics committee. Where we are at the moment is that the ethics committee has the diaries. There was a very sensitive moment during the hearings on the diaries when it was reported that Packwood had decided to resign, and then was immediately answered the next day that no, he isn't, but that the Justice Department had served a subpoena on him, mm-hmm. and also asking for the diaries. And that when that he was prepared to resign, but when the Justice Department filed that subpoena on him to produce the diaries, that he reevaluated his situation and felt that as a sitting senator, he could better fight any kind of criminal charge that might be brought against him by the Justice Department. So at this point, now in September of 1994, almost 2 years after, well, certainly 2 years after the election campaign was going on, but and 2 years and 2 months from the time of the initial story, or lacking 2 months, I mean 2 years, from the initial story by the Post, we assume the Justice Department is still into the issue in some manner. We assume that the Ethics Committee is continuing to take any depositions that it has not taken and needs to, and that it has the diaries so mm-hmm. that they have been analyzed. But we are in a very sensitive time right now as far as the work of the U.S. Senate and the Congress itself is concerned, and that is that we've had real partisan trauma over a health care bill, over a crime bill, over the Haitian issue on whether we should go into Haiti and restore democracy there, and an election campaign again. And a number of senators want to be home campaigning. And it appears as though in September 1994 that there is not going to be a hearing, though we have asked consistently, lawyers, women, consistently for a public hearing, and have been assured that by the Ethics Committee that when their investigation is done, they will consider that. It depends upon what their investigation mm-hmm. has produced. So in September 1994, we assume all these things have happened, but because of the intervening other issues and the election, that nothing will happen until after January, because they're going to recess in a week or so, and they're going to all go home and campaign.
Some people might speculate that Bob Packwood actually has won in his strategy to delay and thereby distract public attention and Senate attention away from that to other issues. Now he's become a spokesperson, a leading figure in the health care debate.
Right, and that's common. That's common attitude among reporters, particularly out of D.C., where, mm-hmm. If it's not on the front page today, it doesn't exist in Washington, D.C., because something else is going to come over tomorrow. And I've had some calls from reporters in D.C., and some from here in Oregon, some from various places, saying, bring me up to speed on this. What's going on? Is it still there? and we talk about what might happen, and I say, well, it's not dead. They've still got the ethics committee has the issue. Somehow or other, they're going to have to dismiss everything if they want to get rid of it, and just say we're tired of this. We're not going to listen to it anymore, or they've got to go forward.
Right.
One of the two. And so with this election, however, it's very sensitive for Democrats and Republicans in the U.S. Senate because it's the split now is 54, whatever, 47?
46, 54.
Yeah, okay.
About resigning.